And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Greetings from Beyond Radio. I'm your host, Rich Valdez. And this evening, I've been looking forward to this evening, quite frankly, ever since I found out that we were going to be able to have not one, not two, not three, but four individuals that played a very, very intricate role in the time in my life where it just came out of nowhere. It really did. But before I go any further with them, let's, you know, introduce every single one of the platforms that you can listen to us from. And that is Spotify, Facebook, YouTube, iHeart, and Get Haunted. By the way, that's the new network that we will, that we are literally premiering on tonight, Get Haunted. So also listen to Amazon Music, Podcast Index, Listen Notes, Podcast Samsung Podcast, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and Pandora. Just so people are aware, this is not our first rodeo. For those of you that are coming on to watch us for the first time in Get Haunted, we've been around since 2014, and we have a lot of interesting individuals that we've interviewed over the years. But this time around, as I stated many moons and many shows before, the reason I called it Greetings from Beyond Radio is because I didn't want to box ourselves into just the paranormal. I wanted this show to be a platform for anyone and everyone, and that includes Hollywood. And I'd like to introduce to you guys people that had a very, very important role when it came to actually casting for the people that would play us, clergy, in Eli Roth Presents The Legion of Exorcist. First, I'd like to introduce the man that brought the cast together in the first place, and his name is Paul Sinecor.
Hey, Rich, how are you?
I'm doing great, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on here. I feel like a kid in the candy store. I got butterflies and everything.
Hope you're not diabetic in that candy store.
I'm not.
Mr. Sinecor and Paul, just tell the audience real quick, you know, what you do. You're into casting, but you do so much more. You've done acting too. By the way, he was in one of the episodes of The Legion of Exorcist. Can you guess which one? But you do casting. What else have you been involved in?
Yeah, so I'm a casting director, CSA, part of the Television Academy. I was a SAG actor since 96. I'm, 27 seasons in now. And, you know, been cutting my teeth as a producer with projects and developing, do a little writing. So a hyphenate is what I am, really. But the real business for me is casting. So Paul Sinecor casting. Yeah.
That's, and let me tell you, you did a great job. And little did I know that there was going to be another little cameo appearance by someone by the name of, Eric the Viking, Eric, help me out here.
Eric Roberts. Oh, yes.
On our show. And I was like, wow, okay, that's great. And then everyone else that came along. But, you know, before I go any further, I'd like to introduce, even though you were our first guest, ladies first, I'm going to also introduce onto the show Reagan DeFloria. I hope I said that right.
It's Regan, but Regan. Regan.
Thank you for joining us, Regan. And I had the pleasure of meeting Regan when we had actually gone up to do the pickup shoots in April of 2022, and she played Rita Strugala in the recreations. And thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. She has a great singing voice, by the way. If anyone here in the chat decides to ask to prove it, I will put you on the spot.
On the spot.
And our next guest, Steve Crawford.
Ta-da!
Look at that. Yeah. Yeah. That's part of what you do.
Blonde version of Steve,
Yes. Steve, how are you?
Great, man. Good to be here. Honored to be here. Thank you.
It's honored to have you on the show. And he played Mr. Reverend Sean Whittington for the show Legion of Exorcists. And he's also entertainer, magician. You're just about everything, aren't you?
You know, what's a magician? Always a magician. I'll be honest with you. It was my full-time career for a lot of years, a lot of traveling. And my college education was acting, and I'd always promised myself I would move to L.A. and become a full-time actor. So I quit doing the traveling, the big shows, do some entertaining on the weekend as kind of a fallback thing, but acting full-time now.
That's great. And do me a favor, Steve, don't disappear on us yet because we still have one more guest.
You got the controls. I saw that. How'd you do that?
I'm telling you, our next guest, just so everyone's aware, is my doppelganger, the guy that played me on the Eli Roth Presents The Legion of Exorcists.
And not an easy cast, Rich.
Now, let me tell you. No, wait. Let me tell you. He was a great casting. I mean, granted, I've kind of trimmed my beard since then, but he had extensions. He needed extensions because my beard used to be down to here. And Regan should know because, you know, she met me in person.
Yeah.
I had the whole Fu Manchu going, but, you know, I have to answer to a higher up called Bishop James Long. He said, Rich, you need to shave that down a little bit. It's not presentable. And I was like, all right, fine. But
at some point, we'll talk about my hair.
Yeah. But with no further ado, my doppelganger, James Burbage.
How's everyone?
Yeah.
You.
Thank you, sir, for joining us. And let me tell you, I've also seen James on a few commercials. I've seen him on, I think it was a show, if I'm not mistaken. Was it a show?
Yeah. Welcome to Wrexham, which is it's a show. I played Sean Harvey, who's the director of the football club. Did an episode there. Did a bunch of social media for them as well. Also, did a movie recently. It's called Clicka, and that was with Eric Roberts and Peter Green. And I played Detective Baker, dirty LAPD detective. And it's looks like it's going to be a really cool film.
Yeah, a dirty detective. God, dirty come detective. On, James.
Yeah, and guess who?
I know you pulled it off.
That's a good one right there.
Well, and let me say this, you know, Paul, you did an incredible job with the casting. I felt you really captured the spirit, you know, no pun intended, of every single one of us in the Legion of Exorcists, and really every actor that you picked just seemed to flow and vibe with us. Is this just a talent that you've always had, or is, I mean, how does this work?
Well, let me clarify some things. So, you know, as a casting director, I'm finding the talent, I'm presenting the talent. So that is really my forte. The decision-making came down to the director, Brian Natmiller, for the show, right? So when actual decision comes, that is the way it happens. But I'll tell you, in this casting was not easy. And, you know, for example, Steve Crawford went through, I think he auditioned for nearly every role in Exorcist and was a total chameleon. And when we got to Whittington, I kept looking at Steve and I go, he would be great to play Whittington, but he's blonde. So, you know, I got on the phone with Steve and sure enough, he changed his entire appearance to really become Sean Whittington. And that's what I was looking for here. It was just uncanny how he immersed into that role. Now, Regan as well, playing Rita Strugala, absolutely incredible performance. I know that, you know, I've known Regan for a while, and the acting chops to do that had to be top notch. Since this was elevated scripted recreations of your true stories, right? So it was a very serious approach and a novel idea for the network as well to elevate it to this level. So that's what we were working hard to do. You know, Regan went through amazing things to become Rita, and we have a lot of adventurous stories there. And then go ahead, Steve, what you want to jump in?
You know, first of all, my hat's off to you, and I appreciate you seeing past what you initially saw was this. So I fudged a little bit. I didn't have much of a beard, so I put on a little bit of makeup, and I tried to make my hair look darker for those final auditions. But you flashed this picture here, so that's what I wanted to comment on. That's Eric Roberts. He was the first one to meet me. Everybody knows Eric, of course, on the set. But you'll notice I don't have a lot of facial hair there, and my hair isn't quite dark enough. So when you look to the right, I just want to commend makeup as well, because right there in the makeup chair, she filled in the gaps. You can see, because I didn't have makeup when I showed up on set. And those are blue contacts, and my eyes were brown. And of course, over the next several weeks of filming, the hair became darker and darker. And of course, I was finally able to grow the beard. But makeup did a wonderful job as well. That's what I wanted to say on that.
Oh, she was amazing. She really was.
Yeah.
That was, if I'm not mistaken, the same makeup artist that worked with me as well.
Yes.
Let me tell you, she did a great job because I'm fugly when it comes to things like this. And boy, she made me presentable for the show. And I was like, that's not me. It must be James. I don't know. He must have been filling in for me. And
yeah. So, you know, it's to talk about that, Rich. I mean, here we are with James, right? To cast you. And also, you know, there's other elements that we wanted to get right, right? So body stature, gait, movement, and uncanny resemblance. So all of these things, a lot of additional elements when you're doing reality and trying to do justice, especially for the gravitas of the work that you guys do, right? So we all approach this incredibly seriously. And, you know, when I found James, I was like, as soon as I saw him, I go, that's Rich for sure, you know? So you know, it just was one of those things, and then go through the decision-making process and, you know, and then we landed there, you know?
Let me tell you, James, quite frankly, is way, way taller than I am. I mean, I'm 5'10 at best. And I think James is, what, 6'8", something like that?
No.
What?
Not only that, he's the Incredible Hulk sometimes, and sometimes he slenders down. He's amazing when it comes to that. And let me tell you, Regan did an incredible job as well. You all did. I mean, I was like literally watching like our own doppelgangers on TV. I mean, you don't see the finished product until it finally does air. And there I was like, wow, holy crap. This is amazing. How'd you guys do this? It's Hollywood magic. It literally is.
I'd love to say something.
Yeah.
I know that, I saw a message come up. I know that Bishop Rita is actually watching us right now. So I'd love to, you know, say hi and thank you so much. And she
said hello.
She, the second that I was cast, I was like, I don't think that I can do this without creating a relationship with her. So I found her on Facebook and I messaged her and I was just like, I'm going to be playing you. Can we connect? And she was like, oh my gosh, yes, which I felt incredibly blessed by. And so we exchanged numbers. And so every time that I would be driving to set, especially on a powerful day where I would have to do something, she would share stories with me. She would explain what actually happened that day. I would listen to her. I would record her voice. But I wanted to know what the true story was, like how things actually happened. I would listen to her voice intricately because I wanted to speak like her. And then I would like gravel up because I speak in more of a high pitched voice. So I would like gravel up my voice. Because she's more raspy. I would ask people like when she was actually on set, like what was she actually like in person? Like how did she move? Like, you know, and people would be like, she says, praise Jesus, praise Jesus, praise Jesus, like all the time. Like, so I'd, you know, add in those little inflections, like because I wanted to honor who she really was. Like,
right.
And because I think it's really important, especially when people want to, we're doing this show, and some people want it to be like, oh, it's this exorcist, you know, exorcist show, but we are really playing these true people, like who went through these real experiences. So there was this level of wanting to honor who they really, you know, who you really are, who you really are. And I think that's why the show was such a success, because we honored what really happened, even in, you know, in those moments. And then, I was laughing when you were saying that, you know, Steve like dyed his hair. He did this. James, he wore this extension. And then I had this wig.
Oh, I wasn't going to say that. There was a little thing. We ended up calling you Black Widow.
Oh, no,
because
no.
You looked like Black Widow when that came out. We were like,
we laughed so hard over this darn thing that we gave it a name. That wig was named Cheryl. We would laugh over this wig. I'd be like, oh, girl, I got to put Cheryl on today.
This sounds like they're making a new horror movie with the wig, you know.
Yeah, Cheryl had an identity of its own. I know, it was just hilarious, this thing.
I'll tell you, you transformed.
Oh, yeah, when Cheryl went on.
Rita, because I had the honor, so, you know, I rarely act in anything I'm casting, and it certainly did not cast myself in this. It was sort of a serendipitous thing towards the end as we went through exorcists. Yeah. And then we were looking at, you know, Father Art, and I was like, this is going to be pretty cool. And we gave it a shot, and Brian made a decision, right? So, but within that, I got to elevate the craft of acting and work with Regan, who is an amazing acting coach as well, very seasoned, and it just elevated my game. But I mean, it was a heavy scenario because we took it. This is a heavy thing, you know. Bishop Rita sent us blessed medallions. We're opening up we're talking about greetings from beyond, right?
Yeah.
We are susceptible here within the story, right, of retelling this, of opening up these ideas of what we're doing in the recreation. And we're so deep in it, right? So there was that level. And I got to say, it was intense. I mean, we really became in those moments. We felt that we were doing it justice.
The fact that it was that these were true stories, and I think this is true of any horror film, it's always a spookier experience. It's always a scary experience. And it's funny, my sister, she won't watch certain movies like The Conjuring or anything that's. And I said, you know, every story that scares you that you don't want to watch, they're the ones that are based on true events. And yes. I think that's what made this such an experience for the viewers as well. And for all of us on the set, you know, we actually felt it. It was not a lot of acting. It was almost a lot of living.
I felt the set location helped for that a lot as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the old hospital was just really eerie, just created that atmosphere that was real natural. I mean, you almost felt like, you know, there was supernatural energy around you. It was, you know, the stage was kind of set for that. So I think they did a really good job in regards to like the scout location for the actual set for the hospital. Just the whole feel, it made it easy for us to kind of get into character, I felt.
I'm curious, and I need to ask James this question since you brought up the hospital. Was this in an actual abandoned hospital where you guys did the filming, or was this a cast or just
it,
a?
It was, set? Yeah, yeah. So there was a lot of stuff that happened in this hospital. So just the energy alone, when you went in there, you definitely felt energy. So it definitely seemed like a spot that you would have been checking out and picking up some energy from, for sure.
I asked that question because it's going to segue into my next statement here. I've had many, many people ask me, hey, that set, looked a lot like a church. And I'm like, well, duh, because it was. It was a real church. And I don't know. I guess the gods and God and whatever decided to make it freezing cold in California, that little spot of California. Yeah. And this church is almost 200 years old, meaning there's no insulation. So the stone that was outside was also inside, and it felt like a meat locker in there. Mind you, you know, all of us are looking out into, you know, the cameras, but every now and then we look into the crowd, or I should say the pews, and everyone's bundled up like this, all right, with beanies and everything. And I'm wearing like a one ply shirt. It was 48 degrees in there. And I'm like trying to keep my cool, but it's, you know, the weather was helping with that. So I would imagine now the sets were amazing for the recreations. James just touched on that. And I know that Reagan and also Paul, which you were in one of the episodes with Reagan, mm-hmm. and also with Steve, were those sets or were those actual houses and or churches or what? Give us a little behind the curtain kind of look here as to what happened.
Good, Reagan. Well, we the first thing was in the one that one haunted house, that really eclectic house, which is a historic site. I'd have to go back and look at what they actually call that, but that house has tremendous history, and the objects within as well were really eccentric and very powerful. I remember we walked in there and we could feel it. We could feel the presence.
Feel it. Yeah. Everything. I mean, like from room to room, some rooms felt, I feel like a little more powerful than other rooms. And then the church was, and that was a really, intense day, that church, and Rita was with us.
Like, yeah,
we called Rita, and that day I on the way in, and then I called her, and she was Nancy, who played Colleen. She's amazing, and Rita called, and she actually like prayed with us and told us the whole story of what happened that day. Like of what the true story happened. She shared things with us that weren't even in the story, like that actual. So we were so connected that day before it even happened. And it was just, yeah, that it was actual, it wasn't ever a built set. We were in actual places that were intense, very intense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I know Steve carried the most episodes. I believe you had four of the seven stories. Is that right, Steve?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Yeah. And some of your stuff was absolutely incredible because you're working solo throughout that. It's just you, you know, how did you feel in those locations?
You know, I could reiterate exactly what you just said, and I was experiencing these feelings. So I too reached out to the gentleman I was playing, and that's Sean Whittington, the actual priest and exorcist, and I spoke with him about what was going on and got a lot of support and expressed some of the emotions that he talked me through that. Absolutely.
Yeah. I have a question for every single one of you. We'll start lady first and then everyone else.
Regan.
Did any of you experience any supernatural experiences during and after filming for each and every single one of us?
Yeah. Yeah. Even in saying this, like, I feel like I need to like
do a cleansing
before I even before I even start answering this. Because I didn't realize, like, and Bishop Rita said when I even like started this, she's like, I just need to warn you that if you're doing this, you're probably going to have like, I want to say adverse react, like, you know, like things are probably going to happen and you need to just know. And I was like, well, you know, my whole life, I feel like I was chosen for this role because I am already open. I'm already like, I just felt like it was like a serendipitous thing that I was already chosen for this role. And Paul can tell you so many weird things happened that got me into this role. But I had no idea what was really going to happen at the After Effects. And like, I mean, we were attacked so hard after my house, things that nobody knows. I've never like really expressed that like Bishop Rita and the actual Colleen had to come in like Astro, like had to come and protect like our house. And I mean, my kids were affected. I was affected. It was crazy. And I know that Nancy was really like, hey, every day that we leave the set, we need to like make sure that we leave everything behind. And if you forgot one day, you'd be like, oh no, like I didn't. And then like before you got out of the car, you'd want to make sure that you did, like before, you know, you got out of your car. But it was, it really, really did like make a huge, it did. Like, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, we went through a major like, effect. It was real. It was very, very real. And any person that wants to say that this isn't real is, they need to take a deep, hard look at what is actually going on in this world. And there is a spiritual attack going on in what you guys are doing. I appreciate and I love and I applaud you. And what Bishop Rita is now doing, training women up to be leaders. And like, I'm so grateful. And I realized how much more susceptible I really truly am. And I'm so thankful that I'm a child of God. So, yeah, that's what we went through.
Anything for you, Paul, or were you too busy to even notice any little thing going on around you afterwards?
You know, I was pretty busy, Rich.
Okay.
That's but, you know, I mean, there was a lot of adversity going into this. I mean, as Regan alluded to, you know, for her to become Rita was quite an adventure too. So I feel like just trying to tell these stories, I feel like there may have been an objection from the other side. Right. So it was right. A challenge to even get this done. And I don't know, Regan, I won't go into all of the minutia, but you know, essentially, you know, Regan was the third person to be Rita, you know, and just the way things were to do that. And we were so lucky to get her at the time. Right. So, and a lot of challenges there. I, in my life, I mean, yes, I've had a lot of challenges. I don't know if I could attribute anything to specifically to this. I felt more empowered by it. When I played Father Art, in those moments of the exorcism scenes for me, and the protecting of Regan in that car scene, yes. You know, that episode, for me, I was in those moments, but I felt a divine power, not a demonic, type of challenge. Right. I felt, emboldened, lifted up, powerful in those moments, as if Father Art, who had recently passed away, prior, to this, which I didn't know. And then, you know, let us know right before our church scene, I think that was actually the case. Cause I was, you know, so I feel like he was helping me in the scenes, if that, you know, so there was another thing, like there was a sort of a transition, a metamorphosis, if you will. And I think Regan might be able to attest to that.
Yeah.
And a going beyond yourself, in living in these moments, of recreating these moments, but with the genuine authenticity that we felt while it was happening. And it was very real for us. And stepping away from those experiences after playing Father Art, I felt there was maybe something slightly missing, right? Because it's so empowering, right? A piece of you goes with that.
Right.
So, you know, and now it's like, oh, I kind of long to play Father Art, right? Because there was a maybe emerging, if you will, of what, you know, and a testament to what we did. I mean, Bishop Rita, that even clergy said it felt authentic, and that we carried the gravitas, the integrity that, you know, Father Art possessed, and that, you know, Regan played Rita as a very powerful individual, a woman individual, right? That's taking command of these tremendous forces lined up against her, right? So, and to do that justice, that was the challenge for us, you know? So I think we probably both left a little piece of ourselves behind there in those scenes, you know?
I agree. That's why I asked this question, and I'm gonna ask James, and I'm leaving Steve for last because we have a little picture that we can show with Steve. But James, anything when it came to experiences during and after playing your here?
During, it was easy just to kind of get into the feeling of it being a real experience because my girlfriend in the scene. There was times where it seemed like she was really possessed and with a real demon, but dressed up in character with contacts in that looked like a real demon. So it was like I was actually having the experience. So when I was going through it, you know, it was kind of getting into a frequency of that really happening and what it was like for that to happen. So it felt very authentic and very real in the moment when I was going through it. You know, afterwards, I would say just, you know, just being open to the thought of, you know, the afterworld, afterlife and energy and, you know, demons and things like that. I hadn't been open to it in a while, you know, just from a thought process and being in character and experiencing it. And, you know, I did start to, you know, in my life at different points, different periods, experience some energy in different places. Some dark things I went through. I don't know if it's, you know, for whatever reason, but sometimes my mom, when I was little said, you know, she said, I held you, when we baptized you, we held you up and we offered your life to God, and the devil's been chasing you ever since. You know, it's like one of those little things my mom used to say, you know, they tell stories about you. So that's one of the things that she used to say. So it was like kind of after I had that experience, there was a couple of things that I felt like, I don't know if it was any association, just being, you know, attached to the energy and what we were recreating and all that. But that, you know, that's my experience. But I really, you know, in the moment of doing the scenes and my girlfriend becoming possessed and really holding her down and battling her and really feeling like she was possessed in those moments and just going through that whole recreation of what you experienced, you know, it was really cool.
You know, I'm actually, I mean, talk about really getting into the moment. And so far with Regan and Paul and yourself, you were able to actually capture what we were all experiencing as actual clergy members and theologians and whatnot, seeing things through our eyes and our experiences, which is appreciated. You really got into the moment, which is really, it's hard not to. When you find out that these are really true accounts, that's a whole different matter. And just so that, and since I've seen her pop up, James, I want you to meet the girlfriend, my girlfriend, to whom it happened to.
Hey,
right there.
I do have to say really quick that the scenes that you shot when she was possessed, I really felt that myself, because that is what happened to me. And the emotion that you were pouring out to help her, I looked at Rich. I was like, I feel that, because that is what happened. So you did an amazing job. You all did an amazing job.
Yeah. That hotel room was the setting too. Just the energy in that the little hotel room set off there to the side of the house. Really, really interesting little setup. It definitely gave us the feel for that scene as well.
Thank you very much. And by the way, she's also the producer of this show and husband.
I do everything.
Yes, she does. I
will always, she's gone.
Yeah, definitely. And with Mr. Steve Crawford, I'd love to hear your side of it. And we do have a picture that you shared with us that we will be sharing with everyone real soon before one part of the group has to leave. Unfortunately, they have other responsibilities and things to do. But Steve, how did you feel doing the recreations of Reverend, you know, well, I get his names confused because he has two different names now. It's now Lawrence Morris, it's a AKA Lawrence Morris.
Right, that had something to do with a social media issue. Yeah, somebody had gotten his original Sean Whittington account.
Sean Whittington, Reverend Sean Whittington, which is now Father Sean Whittington. And share with us, did you feel the same way as everyone here has already expressed in the moment?
It is so true. And some of this sounds so eerie that I felt like I was really meant to play this role. Now, I did, when I first heard about the show, there were some things going on in my personal life that related to the subjects that we're talking about here and some very scary things. And I'll give you a brief backstory, but I would like to come back to this later if we have time.
Of course, of course.
There were some things that happened in the Ponkin Theater, a haunted theater, and I won't get into quite yet. But I had set out to and believe as a magician that I could recreate anything that somebody had a supernatural experience. I could recreate it. I could show. And I learned in an effort to do that was not true. But I want to get to more specifically about your answer. My sister knew I was on this quest to investigate scary haunted things. And she said, and her husband had died and her two boys were moving into a different house. She said, the only thing is the realtor says it's supposed to be haunted. And I said, I was texting because I was out of state. And I said, is it? And she says, well, every room has characters and weird things. And so they move in and right off the bat, things start happening. Groceries falling off the couch when they would leave the room, other things falling off shelves, noises through the night, doors opening and shutting by themselves. Her boys were seeing some of these pictures. This is a room where she came in where things consistently fell off a shelf in what she called the gingerbread room right there. I'm seeing a picture of. And this type of thing was going on. I went and stayed in the house for some time. And this was during the casting of Legion of Exorcists. And I was so into this subject. So when we started filming and things would fall in threes, which was very odd. And we heard it in the middle of the night, everything I'd heard, legendary, but the boys were seeing faces come at them and, scary things were happening. Well, I wanted this job so badly. I auditioned from this house, and that's a little inside secret here. Some of the roles, I don't know what it was something out by the pool, the various locations of the house, but I wanted to play Sean Whittington. And I set out to meet the guy. I knew he had a radio show. We started getting some photographs and video of things as quick as we could that was going on in the house. But when I got cast in the role, we started filming and I was going back to the house. Things intensified in the house. This was the scariest part of all. And we have a photograph where we arrived one night at the house and we saw a dark figure standing in the doorway in front of the house. And there it is. That's what we saw. And I grabbed my phone and said, what is that? And I started taking pictures and instantly it disappeared.
Jen, could you please zoom in on that picture if possible, if you have it please. Up anyways.
And we would offer a reward to anyone who could take a phone and prove that we did any doctoring of any kind. If you have the following picture, and it may be on video here. It should just go right to it possibly. But we were standing there and it disappeared while we were watching it. It just was gone. Moments while we're still standing, there's a large, and then that's where it was gone. On our left, all this brush, and they start moving, and some of the pine trees and all started bending over toward us. And I've got a little picture of that. So this stuff was going on while we were filming. And so I called Sean Whittington and I said, man, I said, you know, I said, this sounds kind of crazy. I said, because this was already supposed to be a haunted house. But now that I'm coming home and I'm practicing my lines, and more stuff is starting to happen in this house. The crazy part of the story was when I finally got him on the phone for the first time, we didn't talk about the show. I was talking about all these haunting experiences that were going on, and seeking advice more than I was about the character. So the end of this story, my sister ultimately did move from the house with the boys. The kids were scared to stay there. I was trying to move in. My wife had come from Oklahoma. She wouldn't stay there. It was just too scary. I mean, things had flown off the shelves. And we were all there at Christmas, and I have some video clips of this. We saw some of the doors opening and shutting, which we got on. I turned the camera, and I caught part of that on video. So I sent you that. I chased a bottle from the kitchen all the way up the front yard. This place was flooded with all of these type of things happening, more than I'd ever seen in my life or even heard about. So it was an amazing experience while we were shooting this show.
Real quick, there was a question that was asked of you. There it is. Was Steve on Worst Cooks in America? He was great on there. Was that you, Steve?
I know. Okay. So Steve. It's a true story that I'm the world's worst cook. It's a true story. So my sister, you know what? I was on the road doing shows for years, eating out. I horrible. When I would cook, I was a bachelor for a long time. I just mix everything up and, you know, whatever, didn't care. But I got the greatest meals served to me by places where I work. So it was my sister and my wife both said, you need to be on that show because you really are the world's worst cook. And this was during the strike.
Well, that's why you were cooking so badly. And you were on strike too.
So there was this, I read a thing that said, what can you do during the strike? Reality shows was okay. So I'm like, oh, so this would be a good time. And we sit in my step and they talked to me and figured out I was the real deal. You know, they spent a lot of time. That was fun. We went to New York. Yes.
And Adam says it was great. And I laugh out loud. I know that each of you have had your hands in something that we've all seen. I was looking through Paul's bio the other day, doing a little research. That's my job. I'm the host. And I noticed you've had your hand in Unsolved Mysteries, a show that actually terrifies, by the way, my girlfriend. She hates the music, the original music. Dun, 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 dun. Every time she'd hear that, she would run underneath her mother's bed and hide. She couldn't stand it. It was that bad. But I know you had your hand in that, the newer version, of course. Mm-hmm. You had your hand, of course, in the Legion of Exorcists. And also, I believe it's The Curse of Robert the Doll.
Yes, absolutely. Directed by Brian Nat Miller as well.
And so was Regan in there.
Regan, major role in that. And now talk about a level of respect for an object or an entity.
Oh, yeah.
Robert the Doll is the world's
investigated
most
investigated him.
Okay. So the story and the way that was told is really remarkable. Regan and I, we got to see Robert unveiled for the first time. Remember the box on our first day when we were in the apothecary and prepping up to play the Rooters? So,
the Rooters. You know,
I played William Rooter. Why? Because Father Art, but also because he looked identical to my grandfather. And again, a casting kind of serendipity, right? But the respect around Robert, you have to introduce yourself to him. You're not supposed to take any pictures without his permission, and you should thank him when you leave and say goodbye with the utmost respect. And Brian went and shot. They went to Florida and shot him in the Keys, where he lives, right, in the museum. And then the replica was done, and it was just uncanny, you know. So you talk about it, Regan. I mean, you held the doll.
I sang to the doll. And what's really interesting is I wonder too, like, how much of what I went through
may have been Robert.
I do. I mean, like, honestly, like, did I know it sounds so silly, like, but you know, what did we like cause some kind of like ripple in like the force when we started all of that, because we were doing them simultaneously. There was like a little bit of a gap in between where we were doing Robert the Doll, then we flipped over to Legion, and then we went back, finished that, and then went into the other one. I mean, that's a lot of heavy work in that whole time. And my, like, what Paul and I were doing, like, it was a huge age gap. So what time period did we start Robert the Doll? Like,
this late 1800s, 1890, when he comes over and the origin, and then he goes through a couple generations, and then we're in the 70s where the third owners of the house. And
I went 70s,
Robert.
Wait, was it 70s and then 90s? And then when did I end? Like,
oh, for you. Yeah. You had a long, because Robert, William, yeah.
So in our episode, I went through three different generations with the doll, like what Myrtle Reuter like had him.
She goes on after the husband. The one that
put him in the museum at the very end. And and like my husband dies, like Paul actually like dies in the car. And it was very tragic. Like, it was really awful. And it's probably one of my most favorite things I've like ever done. And it was so emotional. But like, how many times did I misstep? How many times did I not do this? Did I not do that? Like, I think about these things because what I went through after was so difficult and hard. And like, I know it was a lot. I mean, they did a lot in that show that like can cause, you know, tragic stuff afterwards. And I didn't like say like to myself, like, oh, there's going to be this, you know, awful stuff that's going to happen to me afterwards. It was like, after like when all the stuff was going on, I was like, oh, maybe like, is that why? Like, if you watch all the documentaries of stuff, like people that went through, you know, and that's when I was like, wow, maybe I did like put myself in these positions. Would I do that again? I mean, like, as an actor, it was amazing. Like, I did some like incredible work. Like, I really love what I did. Would I protect myself a little bit more? Yes, absolutely.
You know, it was interesting, Rich, like just when the job came across the desk and I looked up Robert the Doll. At first I thought I didn't even want to look at Robert on the internet, because immediately the first thing is like about his picture, as if it's just even disrespectful to have that. And, you know, and he's at a distance. Right. But I had to take, you know, time fortunately before, so I could kind of warm up to the idea of dealing with this, because the respect was so high for him. Right. And yeah. I think that's what Regan's alluding to here. I mean, on set, he was treated amazingly. Even it was the Henson Company that made the replica,
which is beautiful.
They did an incredible job. We actually got to see Robert the Doll the last day of shooting for us. It was amazing because I've investigated Robert the Doll many, many years ago. I'm talking 2004 in the East Martello Museum. I was locked up in the museum with him, with another team. And
really?
There was a lot of activity going on. But I want to get to
and James. You were part of that too, right? I had that. You were on Robert the Doll as well, weren't you?
Who?
James. James.
No, no, I wasn't on Robert the Doll.
You have me on Robert the Doll? Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd like to, we're going to have, Steve and Regan stay with us for the next half hour, but we're going to have to let Paul and James go very, very soon. I'd like to give an opportunity for both James and Paul as well to, get info out there for people that may want to know more about you guys. And let me tell you, I've been keeping up with James. He's my doppelganger and I see his posts and let me tell you, brother, very uplifting. Even when you're at your lowest, you still manage to find something positive to throw in there. And that's appreciated because you make it real. You may be a star and everything. You're also a model. I wish I had a body like that, but I'm 54. Those years are far gone for me. But what's in the works for you? When it comes to James, are you up to?
Those are some very nice things to say. I appreciate all of those.
I speak the truth, sir.
What am I up to? I'm auditioning a lot. Got this feature film coming out where I play Detective Baker. And it's kind of a big deal for me. Like I said before, one of our stars from this production, Eric Roberts, is in that feature, along with Peter Green, who played Zed in Pulp Fiction, played the villain in The Mask, a lot of other films, big films, been around for a long time, a legend. So it was kind of surreal to share the screen with him. So that's coming out soon. Looking forward to the premiere of that. And doing what I usually do, just try to spread positivity. Work on myself, self-improvement. I stay in the gym. I try to stay healthy, try to stay young. And, working on being creative. I'm involved in a few projects where I'm trying to match, everything takes money to make it happen. Money with productions and also creating some opportunity for myself in between there somehow. So that's about it for me. And just keeping my feet moving, staying busy.
And let me tell you, if there's ever any other project that I get up, get involved in where I need recreations, I'm reaching out to Paul and you to make sure you play me again.
It'd be my pleasure.
In the infamous words of, Mr. Will Smith, you make this old man look good. So, minus sunglasses when he put it on in MIB. But Paul, also, what's coming up for you? Because we're quickly running out of time, but I want to get everybody a chance to keep literally in pace with everything you're doing, all new projects along with James as well. And what's going on with Paul Cinecore Casting?
Well, it's a grind, Rich. So, it has been slow with the quarter one, as I was saying before the show. And I think we're going to kick back in gear. They announced volume four of Unsolved Mysteries is coming out, and hopefully that continues. Writing, developing projects, producing some things. I've got a film coming up in May that we're casting now, and some NDA projects. So it's always, it's always something, right? So I'm just out there trying to move forward and level up, if you will, and create opportunities. I love actors. I love what they do. A lot of better actors than I am, for sure, especially even in out here.
You did a good job, by the way, with all due respect.
Thank you. But I don't focus on acting like they do, right? So the respect, for me, it's all about a respect for the craft and trying to find talent that's right and realize the vision for the project. in the short run, right? It doesn't matter if it's a film or a commercial or a television series. You know, that's the job. And I'm a people person, right? So this is all about understanding what that is. And I think now I have more of an understanding of both sides as a producer, and then understanding what an actor needs as well. So to kind of level that playing field on both sides is an important thing. And, you know, I'm very empathetic, as Regan can tell you. I feel everything, right? It's, and that's how it was even there. So I think we're on that universal wavelength. I feel the, if you will, the force, right? This idea of changes, of things that happen. So I'm hypersensitive in that way. And I think that helps me in what I do, in tuning into actors and what a vision of a project is. So for me as a casting director, it's just who I am, right? It's an aggregate of all the things that I've experienced in my life up to this point, you know, at 55 years old. So, and it's a wonderful journey. So every day I like to say, do some inspirational stuff like James, you know, it's every day is a new day, and the difference a day makes. As you said, it's very hard to get a green light on any project, especially in the climate right now. And so when you do, when you have these moments on set, or you're casting a project, or you actually get to shoot a scene, any day like that is an amazing day for those of us who love this business and love the craft and the opportunity that we have. The numbers are astronomical on the people that would like to do this and the people that actually audition for it. I mean, for Exorcist alone, I probably saw over, I don't know, probably a couple thousand people to get down to this, right? And that's a light one on a fast pace. Sometimes it gets much bigger than that. I've had projects where we've looked at 10,000 people. Ooh. So, you know, that's just the nature of the business. And you know, I guess I'll leave it on this. If there's a note for any actors, because I get this as a casting director, you know, I always try to say to talent, it's either about you or it's not about you. And what I mean by that is that when you walk into the room for a role or you audition, put yourself on tape, the read is, do you fit the role, right? And it's not a personal type of thing, because I know talent leave that room or send that in, and then it's always they're beating themselves up. What could I have done differently? I could have done this differently, made a different choice, done something differently. Right. But you know, that this is the business, the state of like making a decision on that, it rarely comes down to a personal type of thing. It's really a character match, right? What's right for the vision, and then the collective powers that be that make those decisions. So just do what you do every day, love the craft. That's what it's about. And, you know, bring your best self to the game.
Amen. Everybody loves Paul, and we are so grateful
that
he can see past this and look and see what was inside, you know. And I love you, man. I'm forever grateful for this opportunity, Paul.
And before Paul goes, I really do want to say something, because Paul he's such a visionary. And I mean, one, he really is, you know, he's a fantastic actor, but he's such a brilliant casting director. I mean, one, I enjoyed, I mean, we got to work together so intimately and do some incredible work, like, you know, and hopefully, you know, if we do get to do that in the future, we'd be so blessed. But I'm so grateful for what he created here. I mean, we're sitting here together because of what he allowed us to do. And if we get to do other seasons, that would be amazing. But at least we got this opportunity. But he fought for each one of us.
Awesome. Yes, he did.
He really did. He fought for it. And what he fought for in that room was great actors. See, reenactments before this moment were, you know, blurred out pictures of people, you know, just going in and reenacting. And he said, no, people are like, actors are better than that. Reenactments can be better than that. They can actually be mini movies, like, and great acting doing these, you know, in these things. And that's what he fought for. He was like, we can have better things. Like, there's great actors who can be doing this. And he had a vision and a purpose, and he went in and he fought for it, and he didn't stop fighting for it. And that's why we got what we had. And he really was a front runner in this whole thing. And I don't think that reenactments can go back now. I mean, like, he was the front runner of this whole thing. And when you see groundbreaking material like that, it was Paul Sinicourt. Like, he was the one that did that. And we can thank him for that, because he did that. So he leveled up that, and he is such a diverse, he does look at diversity. He's in all these amazing, you can list all the things, all the groups that you were a part of from, is it UCLA or USC or like,
Yeah.
He's a part of so many things, and he really, diversity, casting, and so many things. He really cares about actors. He cares about people, and again, the empathetic heart that he has and whatnot.
Reenactments. I said, with dialogue, with story, with drama. I said, you're watching. He goes, oh. He said, well, that's not really a reenactment. I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, thank you, Paul. Yeah, it's a genius.
Oh, thank you. Well, this scripted, you know, this elevated scripted reenactment, you know, the ultimate vision of it, was the team, you know, Brian Knappmiller and the director and the team that put this all together, who are phenomenal. To create this platform to allow us to go at it like this. And then once we started presenting talent, we've realized what level we could get to. And I have to thank them for that opportunity and believing in what we're doing and giving us the latitude to kind of raise the game and raise the bar on as this series very well demonstrates.
So Paul, before I let you go, is there any room in your casting for
me? For you? Yeah.
Shame. I don't know. I'm asking. I mean, like, this is my blue steel look.
Well, at first, I mean, if James isn't available, Rich, then
yeah.
James will always beat me out no matter what. Kudos to James and kudos to you both. I mean, Paul and everyone here and everyone else that was cast. You guys did an incredible job.
The cast was absolutely phenomenal in every role. And it's now like a family, right? So this is what we build to, much like, you know, Martin Scorsese or anybody has their actors that they like to go to, right? And you see them quite a bit. For me, I'm blessed to have this family of actors that believe in what I do and the opportunities I try to present. We don't win all the time, right? But we keep grinding away and doing what we can because we love what we do. And I'm thankful for that.
Right. Well, thank you so much for what you did and for this.
Reagan, thank you.
We're all popping in like the Brady Bunch again. But we do have to let Paul and when it comes to, you know, my doppelganger, James, go. I hate to see you guys go, but hey, I understand you guys have other responsibilities.
Bye, James.
is there anything you guys would like to, you know, give us, you know, give the our viewers a way to follow both of you, Paul and James, so that that way they can keep in touch with you on Insta or whatever social platform you guys may have?
Sure, sure. I'm on Instagram, so Paul Cinecourt Casting, and then I'm also a pro drummer, so you see me on just Paul Cinecourt on Instagram and then Facebook. My website is paulcinecourtcasting.com or IMDb, you know, imdb.me/paulcinecourt. So email's easy to get a hold of me. It's just paulcinecourtcastingla@gmail.com. And I'm probably one of the most accessible casting directors around, and I'll respond to anybody who wants to have an inquiry or something like that. And
there you go.
And Rich, thank you so much. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
No, sir, thank you.
I've been working on this for a long time. Thank you.
It's actually been an honor and a pleasure. And James, for you, before we let Paul and yourself go.
IMDb. You can also contact me there and reach me. All my information is there. Also Instagram, it's James underscore Burbage, LLL, James underscore Burbage, LLL at Instagram. I'm there a lot. I do check my messages, so you can DM me there and reach me. And best email for me is jb@epiq1.com. JB, my initials, James Burbage, @epiq1.com. And that's it. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you both. Of course, Regan and Steve, don't go anywhere, especially you, Steve. I know you can disappear because you're a magician.
Yes. I'm not going to.
All right. Yeah, so.
I love all you guys. Thank you, Regan. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, guys.
Steve.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Be still for
you, too. Bye. Bye, James.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
And there were two.
Then there were two.
And three. Then there were three. Then there were three. Let me tell you, that's actually the first time I had the opportunity to speak to both James and Paul. I've kept in touch with them through social media here and there, but when I came up with the idea of having, I wanted the whole cast of actors that had played all of us on, but to tell you the truth, to get everyone else, it was kind of difficult to get them.
Scheduling, I guess.
Well, they either didn't respond or we couldn't find their information, but we were able to find everyone that's been on here so far on the show's information through Paul. He's the one that set this all up for us, and I'm forever in his graces for that, because he's an incredible individual. He actually showed that in spades right here in front of, you know, every single one of my fans and everyone just, you know, chiming in to listen in. There was a question that was asked, and I'm trying to get to it, but for some reason my screen is not moving up for some reason. Oh, I moved all the way up. Yes, if you want to ask that or answer that question, Regan.
Sure.
What was your favorite part of playing Bishop Rita? But at the time she was Reverend, now a bishop. And what was your favorite part?
I would say that my favorite part about playing Bishop Rita, if you saw the show, I'm in the mountains, and so like I'm freezing. So if you see me like continuing to move back, I've got a little space heater.
No problem.
So in the episode where we've finally taken Jen to where the mom and the daughter both are possessed, and we're like battling back and forth, trying, like literally the demon is going back and forth between the mom and the daughter.
It's a jumper.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, I'm just going to share this little tidbit of information, but Rita shared with us that, and it's not in the episode, I think it would have been a little bit too hard to film this, that in the actual scenario, like when the demon was going back and forth, they were like jumping 5 feet in the air. Like the mom and the daughter were like literally jumping five feet in the air, which they didn't film because I think logistically it would have been difficult. But I had that in my head, right? Like, because she shared the story. So like visually I could kind of like see and feel like what would have been happening. But when I came down and I was like dealing in this situation, it was like it became more and more real, like what was happening. And I sat back and I said something to her. I think the line was like basically, and it's not these words, but I was like, not today. Like I said something just like Rita, and I felt it like in my gut. It like said something right to her, and I could feel Rita. You know, I could feel her at that moment. Mm-hmm. And I think having, when you're playing somebody real and you have a connection with them and you can honor them in that way, when she called me that night after it aired and she was like, that was me. You got it. You nailed it. I'm so proud of you. That moment, that was the best part of the whole thing, was getting that call. And I just cried. And I was like, being able to honor her, that was
great. And you even got her Southern drawl in as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. That was great. I thought that was
real. Well, honey,
yeah.
And it's different. It's not like everybody, because she's from a different, she's in Alabama and that's not actually where she was born. But so being able to decipher what her exact accent was, that was recording her, talking to her every day on the way to set, getting her exact accent, how she said certain words, everything. It was a lot. It was.
That's dedication. I'll tell you that much.
Us actors, I think.
Very method. I'm a very method actor.
Yes.
The
best actors out there are the ones that actually do what you just described, Regan. The first time I came across a story, and it was by Bobby De Niro. Everybody knows De Niro, and how he would actually gain weight or lose weight, or would actually study more on someone he was portraying. Cape Fear being one of them. There was another one, and I forget the name of the movie. I know it had Hart in it, where he played an obese man, but he had, you know, satanic powers and whatnot. And it was amazing, the methodology acting. He really gets into his acting, and you see other actors do the same. Steve, do you do the same? Did you feel you had to?
Sean Whittington, who was again so supportive, you know, he said, you know, you need to gain a little weight though. And I actually tried to put on weight for that. And it's funny, I've had the hardest time getting rid of that weight. So I got a little souvenir from the show. But you know, I wanted to mention, it's a support, like you referred to. I was getting those calls and those text messages and saying, man, that's exactly right. You nailed it. And at the same time that was going on, I was getting support over these experiences that we were having at my sister's house. And
yeah,
he did a blessing at the end as we were leaving for that house. You don't have to show these videos. I know I sent you some stuff. The swimming pool had changed from blue to green with a weird gray smoke and all. But my last day there, I went down into the very scary haunted cellar. And I sent you some video of this. And there were these white things floating all around me everywhere. Orbs of what somebody called them, but and he that was the day that he did a blessing. And yeah, that's the pool, by the way. You can see how the water changed, but you don't have to show all this stuff. I wanted to get in a little backstory about hauntings and things of this nature, if there's time, and we don't have a lot of time, do we?
No, we don't, but we still have
a few minutes.
I'd say 10 minutes, give or take.
There's a gentleman named David May. He actually was the manager of a Honda theater in Ponca City, Oklahoma. And I really, my gosh, my wife's phone here. I wanted to let him listen into this with a phone call, if you guys don't mind. He called me, and this was before we did the film, about doing a show years later. I used to be an escape artist, about doing a show in this haunted Ponca theater on Halloween. And the amazing thing about it, so I'd heard that this Ponca City theater was haunted. And he said, it's going to be Halloween. I want you to do the Houdini water torture cell. That's the act where Houdini was lowered upside down in the water tank. Yes, I've got you on speaker, David. Hold, please.
Oh, sorry.
And locked me upside down in the tank. And I had performed this trick and had some different tanks built. And that particular version was not the one we did. That one has glass all around. That's the trick. That's the locked upside down. But I had an older tank that another company had built, resembling a tank Houdini did. And you had a picture of it too, I think, not as quality a picture, but he said, I'm going to warn you that this theater is haunted. Yeah, that was the tank. And we get up there for this Halloween performance and some odd things happen. And I'm going to set this up. And then I'm going to let Dave say something quickly about this haunted theater, if he would. I've got him on the phone, if you don't mind.
Of course.
But my team was talking about, man, this place, they're feeling these rushes of air and scary things, and they're seeing things. And I'm like, listen, guys, this has got to be business as usual. We've not done this act in a while. You know, none of this baloney going on, right? So what happened was we found out there was no hot water. And there was no carpet cleaning services available to put hot water in the tank. And we had to set it up that day. So we fill this thing with ice water. Well, we have something called a bucket heater. It's a small, very small item that you lower in a cord into the water. Takes a couple of days to really get hot water. Okay. It's a slow process. As that any improvement is better than none.
Right.
That's the first weird thing that happened. I said any warmer water would help. The water looked kind of dirty. So I stuck my fingers in the top to see through the stalk to the hole where my feet would go, to see what was on the water, and it burnt my fingers. The water had started boiling. I've talked to more people about that piece. Could an electrical current, could something, you know, nothing, no explanation. Well, odd things happened through the night, and Dave May was on the stage when someone brought up a picture. He was the MC for this thing, and there was a big horned creature above him on the stage before I did the act. Well, when the time came to perform, the way this thing works is a big pole, big A-frame, where they hoist me up and then they roll a roller at the top. They bring me above the tank and they lowered the stalks off. And when they started raising me, the guy said it felt like this thing was pulling me. And we got all this on video. You see this thing pulling, pulling and pulling. And they're having trouble getting me up. You hear this and I'm like up in the sky. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's too much pressure. Something's going to break. And I get this premonition, I'm going to fall. So I screamed to the guys, get me over the tank. And they grabbed my hand and start pulling me over, pulling over. The instant I got over the tank, the thing does break and I fall and I get injured going into the tank. Because it fell like it did, they couldn't get the stalks lined up quite right. And my guy that watches from the front, in case I need to tap out, because I didn't get a chance to get air. Mm-hmm. So mind you, people have died in this theater mysteriously, and there's a chair where someone died and they claimed that they kept seeing this person's ghost later, and suddenly I think I'm gonna die in this theater. So I try to tell a guy I can't do it, and he's gone, he's not in this spot, which is we never break those rules. He's up there trying to help them get the lid on. They put me in and I black out praying, and I wake up falling down on the stage. When Dave May came out later, we looked at the piece that broke. It had nothing to do with them pulling. It was totally unrelated. It was something a mountain climber uses, an attachment for these four ropes on the top of the stalks. Looked like someone had beat it with a hammer. Mm. And I've had people study this thing and look at this thing. We've got it on video. And we saw a flash of light go across the stage the instant it dropped. This happened while I was out there prior telling people I don't believe in any supernatural things, I can reproduce anything. I didn't want to say there's a ghost, but I can't reproduce what happened. I can't make the water boil. I can't make that thing that was in perfect shape drop. We don't know why this was pulling. I can't reproduce that. So I no longer say that. And that was prior to my sister's house and the filming. Dave, you want to say hi to everybody real quick? This is the former manager of the Ponkin Theater, the Haunted Ponkin Theater I've got on the phone. Can you say something, Dave?
Yes, thank you, Steve. Great show today. And I can just verify that everything Steve is saying is absolutely true. I might add that we had a paranormal investigation group with us that night.
Whoa.
And the theme of the night was paranormal. And having Steve perform the Houdini water torture trick was a great fit, but it was a little too good of a fit, as it turned out, with the things that happened.
Great.
And you sent a picture to me, which I forwarded, I don't know if they have that, that the paranormal team took in the theater from the balcony.
Yeah, that was in total darkness, and the paranormal group would use cameras that could capture in that kind of light, and they captured an image that has been seen around the world now. What I loved about this particular group was they tried to debunk anything. If they got something on tape or on camera, whatever, then they would try every way they could to reproduce it to prove that it wasn't anything else. And that particular picture you have, we tried and tried, and they could not reproduce it. So
I did send you that. I don't know if you had a chance to show it, and you may not want to show, but you have the photograph that he's referring to, that the paranormal. I did forward that to your producer.
To Jen, I'll ask her to look through it. Dave, thank you for being on the show and your input. I myself happen to be a paranormal investigator as well. I have been now 40 years, and I very much also try to debunk any and everything that we come across. So, hey, if you ever want to invite me over to help debunk or prove the existence of whatever may have tried to kill Mr. Crawford here, which I am not too happy to hear about.
No.
Let me know, please. And I will gladly help out in whatever way I can and lend my services. What is the spirit believed to be?
Dave, do you know what the spirit
the question, is? Sorry, missed the last part.
He's asking what the spirit is believed to be, and I
or who?
A couple of stories. There have been people who have died in the theater. And there's a specific seat that people see a spirit appear. Dave, you want to talk about that?
Yeah.
How old is it?
Yeah, the seat you're referring to is in the upper balcony, and we've had some really strange things happen in that area with people seeing things, and I won't go into all of that, but that's an active space. There's a couple other things. There's the family that ran the theater for over 30 years. The woman took her last step, the wife, mother, in the theater. And that family believes her spirit is still there.
Mm.
And a lady who had worked there her whole life, started in the 40s, recently passed away. She believed her husband was in there. And she said when she died, she was going there. So there's a lot of activity there and a lot of different thoughts about what could be going on in this theater.
That experience that night changed my life in that it was soon thereafter that I retired from escapes. I know this sounds kind of weird. You showed a second water tank. I ordered that one destroyed as soon as it was over. I didn't want to say I believe that. We tried that. What you see there is a new tank that I did. And we did it at a K County Fair up near Ponca City. And they wanted to interview me on the radio. And I said, where's the radio station? They said, at the Ponkin Theater. I had to go up to another city, Ponca City, where the radio station was. I was nervous the whole time, and suddenly I had vertigo. Things were spinning and spinning and spinning, and I went and I thought, what is going on? I've never been through this in my life. I just slow to say things I don't understand. I don't know that something is a ghost or a demon or whatever. I'm not qualified to answer that. I'm just saying I can't explain what it was. But it shook me up so badly that I retired. I quit from escapes. Then I became very intrigued, and that led into the story about my sister's house. I said, please get the house. I went there and went after this show with a vengeance. And lo and behold, was cast. And I thought it all came together. Amazing.
If the two of you will stay on after
okay.
The show is over, I'd appreciate it. If you can, that'd be great. If you can't, I understand. You know, life takes over. And I know, Regan, you have a little one, so I completely understand if you can't. But before I let you guys go, how can people get in touch with both of you? Regan, you first, ladies first, of course. I'm a gentleman. And then Steve, you can go ahead afterwards.
My name, my handle on Instagram is just at Regan D. Floria. Facebook is the same. You'll find it. You'll see a hashtag hyphen McCraley. But if you just put in Regan D. Floria, you'll find me on Facebook as well. Right now I'm building a website, but you can find me on IMDb at Regan D. Floria. So that's me, like all over the place.
And Steve?
Oh, so if you like Instagram or new Instagram, it's Entertainer Steve Crawford. And the good news there, if you put Entertainer, for some reason, my name pops up. I'm surprised there's not more Entertainer something. So Entertainer Steve Crawford or Actor Steve Crawford on Facebook. That's a follow page. I have a personal page too that you can look under just my name, you know, for friend requests. But yeah, I love to meet people. We used to post a lot of pictures from my sister's house on Facebook and videos of the doors opening, shutting. Don't do that so much anymore because now we're not living there, but still love to keep in touch and talk about interesting subjects.
Definitely. Thank you both so much for being on the show. And please, if you can, stay on after, you know, we, you know, turn off all the lights and say goodbye to everyone. I'd like to talk to you guys just for a few minutes, I promise, because I have a lot of things to do myself. Believe it or not, I got a lot of case files that I got to go through. But thank you so much, Regan D. Floria and Steve Crawford, for being on this show. And also Paul and Mr. James Burbage, my doppelganger, as well, Paul Sinecor, as well. You guys have been amazing. Thank you so much. I'm honored to have had you guys be on my show. And also the premiere on a new network, Get Haunted, which happens to be tonight. You know, thank you so much to Get Haunted and for having us. I really appreciate it. So Regan, Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me tell my stories. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you for that very often. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Wait in the green room and I will be right back there in a few, actually in a minute. Come to think of it.
Regan, nice to see you.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me, Rich Valdez, for Greetings from Beyond Radio, and also for this amazing show with a few of the actors that did recreations for the show I was cast in for Eli Roth Presents The Legion of Exorcists. It was truly a pleasure, and also the premiere of my show, which has been around since 2014, but on a new network, Get Haunted. It's great, and I thank everyone so much for being on board and listening in to me talk and having a look at my fugly look here, you know, but hey, it is what it is. As I always close every show, live life. Don't let life live you. And peace be still.